The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
It's Pharrell on the bench in the biggest way possible, hanging out the bad seat, a broken head, a bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad actors, bad taste, bad lot, bad dude, bad bread, bad attention, bad vibes. It's the FOTB pod, and they love it when I delve into the deep secrets in the suburbs. Like all the women that love to drink alcohol.
Alcoholics do live a double life. There's the self that you want to show to the world, and then there's the real self.
You know what? I wanted to drink. I like to drink.
I had a hole inside me that I was always looking to fill.
I was a crazy drunk, and that's the truth. I was insane.
When you talk about women and this disease, it just takes you down. All I can think about is I just want a drink. All I want is a drink. I just want to go away.
A woman with alcoholism is not a bad person, but a sick person that needs some help.
I knew in my heart something very bad had happened.
She would have never left her daughter on Christmas Eve. Santa's coming the next morning. She would have been there, and we knew this.
This disease kills people, and that's the truth. It kills people.
Shot of beer, but an iron, 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 shot of beer, lipstick and liquor, women love to drink beverages of choice. Shake out, ooh. The stories are all too familiar.
Julie was a very free-spirited and loving, compassionate woman.
The first time we really talked to each other, you know, the bells and whistles happened. And it was definitely a love connection from the very start. Julie and I were together for 8 years. We had a very solid relationship.
Her family was like number one to her. That was her world, was her family. We became very close. Julie had confided in me with a lot of sensitive issues, a lot of things that she was dealing with. We had a true friendship and trust that not many people get to share.
The only trouble in our relationship was her alcoholism.
You know, this is such a deadly disease, and there's only one way I can really phrase it, but alcoholism is. It's a beast. I don't believe that we'll ever know the reason why Julie picked up that drink on December 16th. I had talked to her about 10 in the morning, and she sounded fine. There was just no red flags at all.
You know, I can't think of anything that was specific to that day. That's the hard part of all of this. There wasn't an event or anything that happened that day. It just happened.
Maybe she was sick and tired of you. She'd been struggling for 3 years with her sobriety and was never truly happy.
Julie had gone to the school and picked up her daughter. Apparently her ex-husband called her and she was drunk and he knew it. And he threatened to call the police.
At around 5 o'clock is when I got a call that Julie was drunk, and I was amazed. So I called Julie on the phone and begged her to pull over and let me come get her. And she wouldn't do it.
She wasn't having it. She was fine. Just went to pick up the kid from school. I've only had a few drinks. I've got everything under control. Don't tell me what to do. I'm not pulling over the car. I've got everything under control. You're the reason I drink anyway. I hate you.
And her ex-husband called me and said that he had called the police on her, you know, which is why she wasn't coming home.
Julie, in fact, I think was very scared. And I think she ended up turning off a main road, driving back in a neighborhood. All the streets looked the same, all the houses. And she drove way back into this neighborhood, a couple miles.
When I got home from work, there was a police officer here wanting to know where she was. And I didn't know. I had no idea where she was. I absolutely think she was in that neighborhood because she didn't want to come home because she knew the police would be here and what the legal ramifications were going to be.
Her rage toward her ex-husband leads her down a dark path, driving through neighborhoods where she actually may not know where she's going. She got lost.
Her daughter was very scared. And when the car finally did come to a stop, her dad instructed her to get out of the car, go to the nearest house, and knock on the door.
I was just coming home. I saw something like a Suburban or a vehicle like that parked right across the street from my house over there. A little girl had got out and went and knocked on the door, and my son and two of his friends were outside, probably right there in a minivan. The little girl said that she needed help. My son took her and set her in the van with his friend and their two little kids because it was freezing cold that day. The lady driving the vehicle put her car in reverse and backed up like 5 houses and left her car running, and she just got out herself. The truck had rolled forward and ran into that tree.
Julie forgot to put the car in park, and it rolled down a hill and smashed into a tree. Well, of course it did.
I saw her walk down the hill, and she got about as far as that green thing, and then I couldn't see her at all. And the police came. She had just, like, disappeared. They said, you know, to try to look for her, but don't try to stop her. My son went looking for her right before the police even got here, but we didn't find her.
Julie ran off in hiding. She left the car, smashed into a tree, and headed for the hills. Run to the hills, run far away.
It was dark, and it was freezing cold.
I got a call that she was in Dale City and there had been an accident, and that her daughter was okay, and that she left the scene of the accident, which totally blew me away because I can't ever see her leaving her daughter.
But she did leave her daughter.
My understanding is that the police weren't very helpful. In fact, they thought that Julie was fleeing the scene and that she was trying to avoid police. Literally, they didn't do anything other than drive up and down the street.
In the police eyes, you know, that she was like an unfit person because she was drinking and she had her child with her, you know. Which I do 100% understand them being concerned about the little girl, but just like I told the police, she's a person, she's gonna freeze to death out here. It's really cold, and she didn't have like a winter coat on, she didn't have her purse or anything. I told them it was just her.
Julie ran, and the cops are looking for her, and she left her daughter. She's in a whole heap of trouble because she picked up that drink.
I guess it was probably 8 o'clock. It was dark, very cold, and I went through the neighborhood to look for her. And there was no sign of her at all. I heard nothing else from the police that night. So the next day, I went to the police station and tried to file a missing persons report. The desk officer attitude towards it was that, you know, she's a drunk, she's running from the law. And I became very persistent and wanted to see a superior and stressed that point that she would never leave her daughter.
I had no idea that Julie was missing. On Friday morning, I got a call from Jerry. Jerry was asking if I knew or if I had heard from Julie at all. And I told him I didn't expect to, that I had talked to her on Wednesday and everything seemed fine. He told me that she hadn't come home, and that was very much just not like Julie at all.
Everyone was concerned for Julie, but the popo weren't. The popo thought Julie was a drunk lush who caused a wreck and fled the scene and left her child to freeze to death. She should have never picked up that cocktail. That's faux show. But then, 2 days after her disappearance, a major winter storm came into the area.
Julie's parents came in from California on the night that it started to snow. And of course, they were very concerned, very worried. And we got 2.5 feet of snow.
The snow fell hard. It fell for 24 hours. At times, there was no visibility. Everything was shut down from the airports to the trains to the metro to the traffic on your street. It completely paralyzed this region.
2.5 feet of snow and no one has seen Julie. She must have had a hell of a buzz going.
The official snowfall total at Reagan National Airport was 16.4 inches. But in Northern Virginia, as much as 2 feet of snow fell. This was an incredible snowstorm. It was so big that it's going down in the history books. It was the largest ever December snowfall in Washington's history.
By Sunday, Julie had been missing for 4 days.
You know, Julie so desperately wanted to be the perfect mother, the perfect wife, the perfect daughter, and she just never felt like she measured up.
Because she wasn't.
Those haunting feelings that she would give up, the drink would win.
Arrests for women driving under the influence were up 30% from a decade ago, while DUI arrests for men have actually fallen. So it's the women that have been hitting the bottle. Binge drinking among women is on the rise.
Alcoholism has been a problem throughout the ages. We used to see it more in men because they were less closeted, they were more in the public eye, they sought help more. But now we're seeing it equalized, and we see women and men both having a lot of difficulties.
Well, both men and women do hide their drinking. It's not just women who hide it, although women are probably more likely to hide their drinking because of the great social stigma that is associated with drinking.
Women who have a problem with drinking are much more harshly judged in our society than men, harshly judged by their family members, harshly judged by friends. And they're 12 times more likely to experience resisting to coming forward and admitting that they have a problem.
And everyone talks bad about them in the neighborhood. They become the social drunk and then everyone's favorite punchline.
We spend many years hiding the fact that alcohol is taking over our lives.
This disease kills people. And that's the truth, it kills people.
As a teenager, I always kind of felt like I was didn't fit in, like I couldn't find my place, awkward and uncomfortable, and so drinking is what got me through it.
Emily had been sober for 3 years.
I was always kind of in trouble. Like, I was that kid that was always in trouble. My naughty alcoholic behavior started a long time ago, and luckily, the mom in me curbed it when I had kids.
At 25, she had 2 sons. She sounds like she loves to party, that Emily.
I had a family. I had a family that I wanted 2 little boys and a husband and a house, and I got to stay home and be the PTO baseball mom I wanted to be. But as I was growing up, and I didn't really know how to deal with those feelings of not feeling comfortable and not feeling good enough and wanting to fit in but never feeling like I did, there was a death in my family. And without even noticing, I went into caretaker mode. I forgot to take care of myself. And so I started to drink because you can't handle that much pressure.
There were so many problems in her own life with other people's issues that the easiest way to escape it was hitting that wine bottle, apparently.
So I started drinking just, you know, at 5:30 or before a baseball game, just a few beers. And with that, like, some of my responsibilities started slacking off a little bit.
When feelings build up over time, that can be a setup for alcoholism because you can only hold so many feelings for so long, and then you need relief and you need some way to feel better.
So why not have that pent-up frustration dealt with accordingly with a couple of Bud Lights?
My marriage really wasn't that happy of a place to start with, and so we started to fight, and as we started to fight, I started to drink more. My divorce was definitely the time where what I had envisioned, and even if it was just a fantasy of a perfect life, which it really was, it was still my fantasy of a perfect life. And the breaking down of it was horrifying and horrible and sad, and you know, I went from drinking a little bit after 5:30 to drinking every day.
Why not? Your marriage is done. You already love beer. Now that he's gone, you can crack the whole 12-er.
I got to the point where I couldn't imagine my life without drinking. And when you get to that point, when you can't imagine going to a baseball game or a PTO meeting or on a date or anything without being intoxicated, you are screwed.
Sometimes you just need a beverage when you think about it. Things had been spiraling out of control for Emily.
I was a crazy drunk, and that's the truth. Like, I was insane.
She was drinking 18 beers a day. Low-risk drinking is no more than 7 drinks per week. Emily had that crushed. No more than 3 drinks in a single night. She also had that crushed.
During the end of my drinking, nobody really wanted to hang out with me. Like, all I wanted to do was drink. And if you couldn't drink as much as me, then I didn't want to hang out with you.
Because you were kind of hot.
And even the heaviest of drinkers at some point, like I had a boyfriend who was my drinking buddy and he left me. You know, when your drinking buddy leaves you, that you've got a problem.
Well, that's probably true. If your drinking buddy leaves you, you've definitely got issues. But maybe you have the wrong drinking buddy, Emily.
You ask that all the time. Like, what was your defining moment? What was that moment of clarity where you knew? And for me, I got a DUI. And when I read the ticket from the DUI, it was like excessive speed, running a stop sign, running a red light. And I didn't remember any of it. I didn't remember. I mean, I remember drinking at the bar and I remember getting in the car, but all of those traffic violations, I didn't remember. And they pulled me over with their guns drawn and horrifying. It was horrifying.
Well, at least you didn't have to remember it. And what's wrong with a little excessive speeding when you got a beer buzz?
I spent 14 days in jail. I lost my license for 2 years, which now looking back on it was kind of where my recovery began. But when you are a single mom of 2 little boys, you can't, like, I couldn't figure out, like, how are we possibly gonna do this? And I knew I had to ask for help. I had tried not drinking by myself a few times, and I knew I could not.
They took everything from Emily, her kids, her life, her husband, her boyfriend, and even her hotness. Alcohol had sucked it all out of her and ruined her life.
I wrote every day, and to look back is amazing. I'm so glad that I did that. But I started to do that to kind of get out of myself and to get away from some of the pain as I was numbing out and sobering up. I was feeling all of these emotions and I had to have an outlet, so I wrote. November 2007. Somewhere in my brain, I always knew that sobriety was my only hope, but I fought it until the bitter end, until my life was so out of control, so unmanageable, that I had no choice. This is the hardest thing I've ever done. I am scared, I am sad, and all I can think about is drinking.
Kind of unfortunate that Emily became an author, because she was kind of fun when she just went to sporting events and pounded a 12-pack. Once she started writing, she was a little boring.
Alcoholics and addicts don't like their feelings. That's normally why we drank. When you go sober, you feel them. You feel them. The constant craving in my body is almost painful. I want it gone. I will pray. I know everyone goes through this. I know I better reach out or I'll fall on my face. I cannot do this alone. When I had that moment of, oh my God, I'm gonna have to feel my feelings for the rest of my life, I didn't know if I was courageous enough to do that. Now I know I am, but like that moment of clarity of, oh shit, there is no more numbing agent, not ever.
So get on your big girl, because you're going to walk through it and feel everything totally scary.
The question is, did Emily's friends come back and her family after they turned on her because of her excessive beer drinking?
Are you ready for the nation's first and only free 24-hour network dedicated to you, the betting and fantasy sports enthusiast? SportsGrid will provide you with real-time content, statistics, and gaming intelligence unlike anything you've ever seen before. Located both in the heart of New York City and inside the FanDuel Sportsbook at the Meadowlands, SportsGrid is live 18 hours a day, here to serve you, the fanatic. This is SportsGrid. Get on the grid.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Emily thought she had her problem solved by just writing her feelings out and expressing herself.
December 2007, powerless. Oh my gosh, I am. Alcohol was my best friend, my support system, my comfort. I didn't think about how I couldn't get out of bed, how I couldn't get anything done, how I drank instead of playing with my kids, how I fought and argued with everyone and went totally crazy. I didn't think of any of that, just when I could take my next drink. It had total and complete control of me.
Not driving was really difficult and humbling. Having to ask for rides to get the kids to games and to go to the grocery store. I mean, such simple stuff like picking them up from a friend's house had to be pre-planned. It was really, really, really difficult. At about 8 or 9 months, I went from that discontent crawling out of my skin, I'm never gonna make it, I wanna drink every day feeling, to hold on a minute, I can do this.
At 9 months sober, my world opened up. All of a sudden, that feeling of complete anxiety and discomfort lifted. I would have never known that all the pain was worth it. I guess that's what they mean when they say, don't give up before your miracle.
Humiliation was gone.
This is my breathalyzer. I've had it for a year. It's like 12 days till I get it off, which is super exciting. Every time I go to start my car, I push the button, it warms up, it tells me when to blow, and we wait for it to say pass, which I always pass, and I can start the car. The breathalyzer is a pain in the ass, but I am so grateful to be driving that I don't mind at all. It's my honor to breathe in this stupid thing. I won't pick up a drink because coming as far as I have, I don't want to do it again. I don't want to have to go sober again. It's hard. It was really, really, really hard.
Hi, Kate. But most people do fall off the wagon.
I have a tendency, like so many alcoholics, to isolate and to not talk about it and to kind of let my disease get the better of me. And because I blog every day and I've made a commitment to do that, I can't. I can't completely isolate. Like, I need to log on to my website every day and say something. I had no clue that emilyism.com would become what it is today.
I wouldn't believe it if I didn't see it, if she could maintain it for years.
My readers are from all over the place. Minnesota, Chicago, all over the country. A lot of just normal women. Normal women that are on the PTO or are full-time employees or really good wives or whatever that are at home and feel alone.
That's because they're alcoholics, Emily, and they love to chug drinks, particularly wine, and then martinis at dinner.
Readers that haven't yet commented, they just read for the support. You kind of hope that they get to the point where they email you or reach out for help, but until then, if reading is what helps them, then and that's where they are.
What I hope for is that they don't get behind the wheel and kill anyone. I really don't care if they read your blog. The real question begs, whatever happened to Julie? Remember, Julie had crashed the car and left her daughter and went off running from the popo.
I knew in my heart something very bad had happened. It's kind of like one of those things you know, but you don't really want to know. And at that point, you know, it became more of a feeling of despair. And just not knowing was agonizing. That Sunday, her parents and I went to the police station again to see what they were doing, and they were doing nothing.
We told the police this was so unlike her. We told the police that we would have heard from her. We told the police she wouldn't have gotten in a car with a stranger. We told them that she wouldn't be fleeing to some hotel. And she had no credit cards. She had no money. There was no activity on any of this. Did the neighbors know what happened? Did anybody? I mean, who could we turn to?
But the police didn't believe anything they were saying. And remember, she had fled. And then a massive blizzard hit town. 2.5 feet of snow. No jacket, no money, no credit cards. No nothing. No one knew where she was.
She didn't just poof, vanish in thin air. I felt like I had to do something. I was gonna get a search party together and start looking.
She'd been gone for 8 days.
Sir, we're trying to find a dear friend of ours that's missing. Huh? This is a flyer of her, and she went missing on the 16th around 6 o'clock.
A lot of these houses up through here are vacant. There's a wooded area back behind these houses right here that it's kind of difficult to get to unless you walk into the houses with no fences, but half of these houses have no fences, you know?
Maybe she's in an abandoned house.
Different streets. And basically, the neighbors didn't even know that something had happened. They didn't know that the police had been there. They didn't know there was a missing person. They didn't know if there was somebody in the area that had abducted her. They didn't know if there was a murderer. They didn't know. And quite frankly, the neighbors were pretty upset. And they all rallied around. They said they'd be more than willing to help.
I just wonder if she was in good enough shape to get back there.
Really, it's that's what we saw. This neighborhood is so big. It takes up most of Dale City, you know. It's one of the bigger neighborhoods in this area. See how there's like a little gateway or something like that, or maybe up on the back porch or in the shed, because all these houses are abandoned. I thought that she was definitely somewhere in that area down the street. I mean, right there is a giant hill. Right here is a giant hill. Almost every hill you go up here is... This is the only way that's downhill.
Maybe she slid down one of those giant hills and ended up in one of the abandoned houses.
She would be in this area within a football field's radius because she wasn't going to make it any further than that.
Let me go back here and look. You stand right here and just watch. It was just a matter of Julie. It was all about Julie. It was all about finding her. Finding her for her sake, for her mother's sake, for her daughter's sake. This is Christmas Eve that we're talking about. And, you know, she would have never left her daughter on Christmas Eve. Santa's coming the next morning. She would have been there.
But she wasn't there. No one knew where she was.
We knew. She didn't get very far.
Hi there. Hello. My name is Mary, and I'm looking for a friend of mine that went missing in this neighborhood on the 16th.
I asked him to keep this story alive, asked whoever came to the house if they had seen anything or heard of anything.
That night, I was out, and my wife was shopping.
And quite frankly, we were desperate.
There's a creek down in here.
I can't begin to tell you how painful it was to see Julie's father and Julie's mother knocking on doors, hoping that somebody would have an answer to where her daughter was.
All we could do was look. I mean, we obviously don't have the resources the police have. So it was all up to us, and we kept hitting dead ends. We just couldn't find her.
The whole community was terrified to Julie's whereabouts. Lest we forget that Julie was hammered when she wrecked the car. And her daughter ran from the car before she wrecked the car, and that she took off on foot only to disappear into thin air.
I didn't want to give up. So Robin and myself, we started looking in sheds. We started looking under porches, just thinking that maybe she was trying to get warm or to get out of the cold.
I see those papers up there. It looks like it's foreclosed and
okay.
Vacant. You want to hit those windows and I'll see about the front door. Look, that window's knocked out too, where the air conditioner is.
Here, this is open.
Oh my gosh. Robin.
This door is open.
Oh my gosh. Oh my God.
Let's just go in.
You go first. It really stinks in there.
Really is unbearable. The smell and stench in this abandoned house that we've broken into.
Oh my gosh, this has been abandoned, it looks like.
And trashed? But maybe she came in here just to get out of the elements, or maybe somebody brought her back.
I don't want to go through here by myself.
What if somebody brought her in here? Could you imagine? Anybody here?
Looks like somebody left in a hurry.
Let's bolt. This is not a good place. You know, it was never an issue about what Julie had done was wrong. She was in no state to have been driving, but the fact that she got out of the car without a purse, without money, without a cell phone, without a coat, something was terribly wrong.
It could have been me. I suffer from alcoholism. I had not done the same thing that Julie did that night, but I very well could have. Because, you know, we do things when we're drinking that otherwise we wouldn't do. And so I knew she had to be found.
Suddenly your friends are admitting that they're alcoholics as well. Things are getting very interesting, but we still don't know where Julie is.
She's a person and she's in trouble. And we needed help and there was no help. We were the voice that Julie is somewhere and we need to find her.
We are in this moment where the power dynamics between men and women are shifting radically, and so men and women are effectively switching places. So there are all these new expectations on women, that they be the breadwinner in the family, that they do really well in school and college, that they get ahead in the workplace, and that they are perfect raising their children. And this brings a lot of freedom for women, but it also puts a lot of pressure and expectation on them that they never had before.
They want to be equals, obviously, and they are equals. And some of them can drink men under the table.
So many responsibilities stacked every day. There's less and less time for women available to take care of themselves. And that shows up in all kinds of ways, including alcoholism as well as other medical problems.
If you're not ready, you're not getting sober. That's the bottom line.
Here's another story. Haley, who's got a couple of years of sobriety. Interesting. These women just keep popping up with their tales of alcoholism. They're not mentioning their other substances of choice, though. Let's see what Haley has to say.
I came from a family who was very religious on one hand. On my father's side, they were Pentecostal. My grandmother, I had a very strong influence on her side. And yet, everywhere you turned, there was alcoholism. My dad was an alcoholic, and his uncles, and yeah, it was everywhere. I had no idea, though, because it just seemed so normal to me, that I didn't really get it until I got older.
Women who have a family history of alcohol dependence are at significantly greater risk of developing alcohol problems themselves. But they're also at greater risk because a lot of drinking activity has been modeled in the home.
I did not feel like I was pretty growing up. I felt actually very unattractive.
But she was wrong.
But even when I became a success, I did become a pretty big model. I was the top model in Canada for a long time until I moved to New York. And I lived in Paris for a long time. It doesn't matter who's telling you what. When you grow up with those insecurities, it's up to you to start to love yourself. And I don't think I had that capacity for many years.
Apparently not, but she was smoking hot and was a fantastic model. Several of her shots were intriguing. She was swept off her feet early in her career as her fame was rising in modeling. She got married young.
He was full on in his addiction. He was, you know, drinking cocaine, the whole deal. And I'd say I was a lightweight. I'd go along with it. Every couple weeks, I'd have a joint, or I'd have a joint and a glass of wine, but I didn't think I had a problem because I was no worse or better than anybody else out there. I was seeing people do all kinds of things, so I was just recreationally having a good time. I was a sweet, nice girl, but on the inside, I just couldn't get enough. And when I got married, I had a responsible life. I then had my daughter, and I felt like I owed it to her to live a good life. And I had this real sense of entitlement, like, well, I'm never gonna be like those people, or I'm never going, you know, my ex-husband's the one that has the problem. I was in my early 30s when I got divorced. My son was 10 months old, and I couldn't sleep at night, and I was not doing drugs or drinking. My friends were like, well, why don't you have a glass of wine? You never drink, just have a glass of wine at night.
There's a nice idea. You've had a daughter, now you've had a son. You can't sleep at night and your husband's left you. Your marriage is over. Why not have a gigantic glass of wine to ease your pain and suffering and tension in your life?
I did. And really, that's when I felt the alcohol take hold of me. I had one glass of wine, then I'd have two glasses of wine. Then maybe I'd have two glasses of wine and half a Xanax. Then maybe I'd have three glasses of wine, a joint, and half a Xanax. And then I thought, forget the wine. I moved to vodka and to scotch because, you know, why waste your time with wine when you can go right to something that you take three sips and you're starting to feel that effect?
Now you're starting to think, because if you can hit the scotch rocks, scotch rocks, scotch rocks, you can really get it on. And I like the Xanax. Zanny bar idea as well. A little scotch rocks and a double Zanny bar. Check it out.
I had this fear because I was alone in my life now. I didn't have the husband. I didn't have the buffer. I didn't feel safe. I was alone with two kids. And when that would hit me, I would drink to feel okay. I started to drink to feel normal, which is bizarre. I moved into a house in the Hollywood Hills, which I loved, and I felt really safe up there. I would leave my doors open. It was the middle of nowhere. I had neighbors, but they weren't right beside me. It was very quiet. It was beautiful.
But everyone in the Hollywood Hills parties a lot and drinks even more.
Who doesn't have their kids on Christmas Eve? Well, I didn't. And I said, okay, this Christmas I'm not gonna drink. I'm gonna get sober. I went to bed that night and I heard a crash around 11:45 and I thought my Christmas tree had fallen over. I remember I checked to make sure my master bedroom door was locked. Then I hear, if someone's in there, you need to tell me now. I thought, oh, I'm not gonna say anything. I went into my bathroom, I locked my bathroom door, and as I was calling my neighbors, he started to kick down my master bedroom door. I opened the window, which set off the alarm. But I was so afraid that he was going to keep coming after me that I climbed onto my roof and I jumped off my roof and I ran to my neighbor's house. When I landed on my feet, I broke every bone on every metatarsal across both of my feet and the side bones on the sides of my foot, and I shattered my right arm. And for some reason, I just got up and I just kept on going. And I got to their door and you know, they dragged me in and called 911, and that was the beginning of my bottom.
Of course it was, because after that crash landing and broken feet, the adrenaline got her to the neighbor's house.
Want to light the lamp on DraftKings and FanDuel this NHL DFS season? Then join DailyRoto.com and learn from the best daily fantasy sports players. Get updated fantasy hockey projections for NHL DFS, line combinations, and build stacks for tournaments in the DailyRoto NHL DFS lineup optimizer. If you are playing daily fantasy hockey without using DailyRoto, you are doing it wrong. Enter the promo code ACTION for a 10% discount. That's promo code ACTION for a 10% discount.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is going to be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know what's going to happen next, right? After having that many injuries to your feet, you got to hit the script pills. You got to hit those pain pills, the little Vic Perk dance, a little Oxycontin shake.
When you talk about, you know, women and this disease, it just takes you down. Because there I am in a hospital with broken feet. And all I can think about is I just want to drink. All I want is a drink. I just want to go away. After that happened to me, something started to change in me. My drinking started to escalate, but my mind started to tell me that you're an alcoholic. I started to finally have that click in.
Most alcoholics know that they're alcoholic long before they share that information with anybody else or anyone else finds out. And they have a deep sense of self-loathing and self-hatred that stays with them all the time.
I'm surprised she didn't hit the pills. I really am. I mean, it is staggering. She just wanted to have a beverage.
That sense of self-loathing is more alcohol.
I was in the pantry at 7 in the morning, hiding my alcohol. I would pretend I was going in to get the kids cereal, and I would have a cup in there, and I would have my alcohol, and I would pour it in, and I would just pray that nobody would ask what was in the cup. At 7 in the morning, I'm drinking straight vodka at this point. I think that women carry so much shame. I think we have so much shame about being alcoholics. I don't know why.
There is a difference between shame and guilt. Guilt is about something that you did. Shame is about who you are. And I think for women, there is a setup to feel shame when you're an alcoholic.
Or you could have vodka in the morning at 7 a.m. in the pantry and have shame and guilt rocking at the same time.
We're moms, you know, where there's a maternal thing in us where there's a perfection. I mean, I know for myself, I strove for perfection, and in doing that, it started to take me down. After the home invasion, I was completely paranoid inside. My drinking and using was escalating, and I couldn't stay there anymore. My dad was in town, and he said, "Why don't we go look at other places? You can't stay here. You're never going to let this go."
So it sounds like there was some using going on. At the height of her addiction, she sold her home and moved to another one.
And when I moved here, I thought I'd paint and touch it up and do little things, but in my drinking and using grandiosity, I just decided, you know what, just rip it down. I'll live in the guest house, I'll be on the property, and I built my first house. I built half of it drunk, and I built the other half sober.
Good for you.
I just remember my friend Jody calling me up, and she was in a program and that she was taking a cake in for having a certain amount of time sober, which was, I think, 21 years. And she called me and I went, "Oh, brother." And for some reason, a bunch of women in a room who knew who you were and accepted who you were, where there was no shame, where nothing you did was worse than the person sitting beside you, that worked for me. And that day, I just looked at Jody and I said, "Happy birthday, and I want to get sober."
And then she got sober, and she had a German Shepherd, and she walked the dog a lot in the neighborhood. And as I mentioned, she was smoke show hottie, so all the guys that lived in her new neighborhood wanted to sleep with her. That's just a little caveat. Haley's daughter grew up and then found her own wave of problems. And they were exciting.
Drinking, and I was doing lots of coke, and I was doing lots of pills. And I was waking up every day, and instead of functioning like a normal person, I would have a swig of vodka, and then I would do a line, and then I was getting sick all the time. So, you know, like, my first half of the day would be me throwing up from the night before. And then the next part of my day would be me, like, partying. I was just drinking nonstop, and I was all puffy, and I was doing a gram of coke a day, so I was, like, wasting all of my money, and just got really bad. I could just see I was affecting people around me, and I saw how well she was doing being sober, and then I kind of just thought, you know, I think I need to be sober. I'll call you home.
It sounds like her mother had a better run than she did. I think it would have been fun to see what kind of terror she could have maintained.
There she goes.
Yeah.
I think the first year, it was such a miracle. I felt so special. I felt that I just wanted the world to know I was sober.
Hey, Boris. Yeah, I just saw the new t-shirts.
The second year, I think I became a little more playful. I became a little more creative in the things I was thinking about.
Yes, I hear Mr. Tyler likes our shirts. I'm very excited about that.
I wanted to inspire the world, but I really wanted to get in touch with the young kids. And I thought if I did a t-shirt line, and sure enough, in doing that, our following with young kids has exploded, and they're just so happy that someone's in touch with who they are and how they're feeling.
All of her t-shirts are about sobriety and not drinking or doing blow. And now she's making all kinds of money off of it.
I get stopped on the street every day. I've actually taken a t-shirt off my body and put my coat back on and given it to someone on the street. They flipped out over the t-shirt. And I'm like, well, if you stay sober today, I'll give you the shirt right now. And that's what I did.
And now she's made millions. And all the chicks that work at the t-shirt store are smoking hot as well. I need to move to this location.
Girl,
how are you?
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
What's going on?
We got some shirts for you to look at.
Love to see.
My confidence in myself right now is amazing, and I feel really good about myself, but I never want to forget where I came from and how hard it was to get here, you know, because this is truly a gift. You know, some people never get here.
Well, good for you. I mean, you're so blessed. So back to Missing Julie. When the Popo finally put her mugshot on the network news, wanted felony child neglect. Driving on a revoked license. Driving with an open container of alcohol. Where is Julie? They finally put that out on the 28th. She'd already been missing for more than 10 days.
Instead of a missing person, she at that point became a criminal. And that was really tough to take.
People were very unsympathetic toward Julie online. In fact, they were mostly abusive toward her. And saying things like, she's a walking time bomb. Another one read, I can only hope it's a wake-up call to save the little girl from her hell and save mommy from herself. Another drunk driving in Virginia. What else is new? When she's caught, she'll get probation and a suspended sentence like all the other housewives in Virginia do.
These bloggers that were suggesting these horrible things, you know, what Julie did was horrible. Driving with your daughter in the car is tragic. It's poor judgment, but that's what alcohol does. It gives us poor judgment.
You're talking about somebody with a disease that makes poor choices, and that doesn't make them a child abuser.
Mothers do know that they shouldn't put their kids at risk. Mothers are extremely protective and for the most part, nurturing of their children. That, you know, a lot of mothers would throw themselves in front of a car rather than their child get hurt. But the reason that women will drink and drive is because they don't understand how out of control they are.
You know what? I wanted to drink. I like to drink. I would still like to drink.
And yet another story. This time, Jody. But Jody has 23 years of sobriety. Her father had been a drunk, but then he got sober, going to meetings. She said she'd never go to meetings. He took her to a meeting once. That was when she decided she would never do that herself.
The first time, ironically, shortly after I went to that meeting with my dad, I liked that I felt like I could say whatever I wanted to say and be whoever I wanted to be, whether it was fake or real or whatever. I liked it. I love-hated it because it was also, for me, from the very beginning, brutal hangovers and brutal, brutal consequences. I wish my college years were more of a blur than they were. Unfortunately, I have some very visceral, vivid, shameful moments. I could drink like a fish. I could drink guys twice my size under the table. I developed such a capacity, but I was drinking scotch and water, and then it became scotch on the rocks. I also drank tequila and bourbon and everything and anything. I loved being in college. I loved the drinking and partying aspect of it. I loved the fraternity parties. I loved feeling popular. I definitely slept around a lot, and I did it all under the influence.
And you sounded like an absolute blast in college. I'm starting to wish I'd gone to Texas Tech and met her. Her sister was shot and killed by an ex-boyfriend. It's really unbelievable and heartbreaking. And it sent her mother over the edge, and herself, obviously.
I didn't want to suffer. I didn't want to be who I was. I didn't want to be even the bad daughter that was left. I didn't want to be an only child. I didn't want to be a slut. I didn't want to be the person who made bad choices. I wanted all of that to go away.
Sometimes when something tragic happens in our lives, we have so much emotional pain that we do try to numb it and anesthetize ourselves with alcohol after that. And that can really lead to an increase in drinking as well. Because if you don't know how to manage your feelings without a substance and you have something horrible happen to you, that's going to be the thing you turn to.
And drink yourself into oblivion. Now back to all that matters. Julie, whatever happened to her?
On her second DUI, she was still on a restricted license at the time and was pulled over, driving impaired. She should have been dealt with a little more severely, but all she paid were monetary fines and lost a license for a year and continued to drink.
But she got another DUI.
Facing jail time and loss of license for 3 years, as well as big fines. But her lawyer, again, was great and was reduced to her second offense. She went to a 28-day treatment program in North Carolina and then had the court date where she was sentenced to home detention.
But she failed a sobriety test and had to go to jail for a few months.
Which she could never put together any great length of sobriety. The disease really had her. When she became friends with Mary, that's when some real change started to take place in a positive direction. She seemed more to have more direction and more intent on being sober. And that was big.
She was in a lot of pain and needed someone. And I feel very fortunate that I was that person that she chose to confide in.
You tried to save her life and be there for her. While everyone was looking for Julie, her best friend had relapsed and started busting off Vicodins. And then eventually, she worked at a dentist's office and stole scripts and tried to get them cashed in at the pharmacy for some Oxycontin. But the pharmacist narked her out to the popo, and they were waiting for her in her driveway to take her to jail. Horrifically, 13 days after she went missing, police finally went on a grid search and found her body 300 yards from where she had last been seen, and she was gone. She had blunt injury to her torso and prolonged exposure to cold. She was found in a creek with acute alcohol intoxication. It was an ugly ending to what alcoholism can do to people. What a terrible job by the local police, blowing off the case literally and calling her a drunk and an abusive mother and child neglect. They did nothing to find her. They waited 13 days until she was frozen dead. I blame the Popo. My question is, what were they waiting for? The second coming? It doesn't matter if someone's wrecked a car, or they were drunk, or there was a child involved. Why weren't they looking for this chick every single day until they found her? Why did they wait for 13 days to search for the woman? It's sickening. If I were her husband, I would sue the living hell out of that police department and the county and the state. It's true what they say, jails, institutions, or death. That's the end game for drugs and alcohol abuse. The police would not comment. Eventually they did because they were forced to. And they said that originally they didn't conduct a search because she didn't fit the description of a missing endangered adult. Nice decision making by the local police department. The police also said she was a, quote, criminal wanted, end quote. What's the difference, Popo? You wanted her. You should have found her. If she was a criminal and you were looking for her, you would have found her, right? But since she was a, quote unquote, drunk, you didn't give a rat's ass about finding her. You are despicable human beings and a horrible police department right here in D.C. and Virginia. Nice job, Prince William Sound. Here's the deal. Alcoholism is a disease. Get real, people. Get help. Ask for help. Don't keep drinking. You could die. It will kill you. It is a drag on your life. Get it together. It's okay to ask someone for help. Feel good about yourself. Go for it. It's always interesting that most of my cop friends love to pound alcohol. And on that lovely note, we'll end another exciting edition of Caring for You on the FOTB podcast. Oh, shake it.
Want to be the next Daily Fantasy Millionaire? Dunk on your NBA DFS competition with DailyRoto.com and dominate on FanDuel and DraftKings this season. Compete with the pros with DailyRoto.com, Optimizer, and the most accurate projections in NBA DFS, plus lineup alerts, breaking news, late swap support, and much more. Save 10% on winning NBA DFS advice with promo code DUNK. Visit DailyRoto.com/dunk to learn more.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.